Expedia and Visit Scotland invite you to come experience the beauty that awaits in Scotland. The sweep of wild coastlines, quiet lochs and untamed landscapes. Fresh cuisine that feels rooted in the land. Come experience the kind of stillness that stays with you long after you leave. Plan your Scottish escape today at expedia.com/visitscotland.
Ready to soundtrack your summer? With Red Bull Summer All Day Play, you choose a playlist that fits your summer vibe the best. Are you a festival fanatic, a deep end DJ, a road dog, or a trail mixer? Just add a song to your chosen playlist and put your summer on track. Red Bull Summer All Day Play. Red Bull gives you wings. Visit redbull.com/brightsummerahead to learn more. See you this summer.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz interview series with San Diego-based jazz keyboardist and composer Hendy Bear. We dug into her debut and new 2026 album called Jillo and A Life in the Music. This album is ripe for Women's History Month as it was inspired by the first female president of Smith College, an educator and humanitarian, Jill Kerr Conway. Hendy plays scorching blues and jazz as well as being a member of blues guitarist Fuzzy Watkins' band for years. She is also a solo performer with her own band, and after raising her family, she's now 64, and during the pandemic, she went back to get a master's degree in jazz. It all began in earnest as she studied jazz piano in the beginning at Berklee College of Music in Boston with former jazz messenger Donald Brown. We cover her whole journey. It's quite a story. Enjoy this interview. Well, get into the music. It's great to meet you. Thank you so much for taking a minute out today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So before we get into the latest album, I want to begin with 6 years ago, this pandemic was changing everything, changing our lives.
That's right. Yeah.
How as a musician did you get through that era? And how has it changed the way that you create and live today?
That's a good question. So I think at the beginning of the pandemic, I was just thinking it would be 2 weeks. And so I sort of just like was, you know, on Zoom every day with everyone and, you know, having a big vacation and everything. And I think I extended that for like a month or so. And then I finally realized, oh, I guess maybe I should do something. And I just happened to have applied to, I was thinking of going to grad school in the jazz studies at SDSU. So that's something I'd been wanting to do for a while. And as it turns out, I was supposed to take the GREs to get in. And because of COVID, I couldn't. And I was so happy because I knew I would flunk all the math. I was like, I can't. So they let me in without taking the GRE. So I was very happy. And so I ended up going to grad school. And it was weird because we had to have rehearsals in masks outside. And, you know, with latency issues with music, you'd be really far away and trying to be tight as a group. But so I went to grad school during COVID. And it was a weird thing. But it did help me. It gave me something to do, first of all. I think I would have been pretty unproductive without it. And it did change. I mean, in grad school, we had to write music and everything. And some of the music I wrote ended up on this CD, on my album. So, yeah, I think it was a strange thing that I went to grad school during COVID. But if I hadn't, I wish I would be one of those musicians who said, oh, I just wrote and I did all this creative stuff. But I don't know if I would have been. I might have been just lazy. So,
well, I think a lot. Yeah, I think a lot of musicians were teaching too, and they had a salary,
yes,
and they didn't have to be so dependent on gigs. And I think it was just all about making sure that there was some level of fluidity. There wasn't like a stalemate, that things were
moving. That's right.
You
and
know?
A lot of people were live streaming concerts, which was pretty creative, you know?
Yeah.
So, I think, and then the other thing I think that really happened to musicians is that all the groups became pared down. Like if you could do something as a soloist or as a duo, then that's what you did. You know, it seemed like everything. And that's, I think there's still influences of that now, like, you know, places where you gig realize, oh, we can have one or two musicians, not the whole band. And so there's still some of that remnants of that around.
For sure. So you touched on the new album. Let's dig into it fully. What was the vision? Talk to me a little bit about putting this album together.
Yeah, well, the vision back to school was we were supposed to write a suite this, I'm telling a secret that maybe I shouldn't, but we were supposed to write a suite about something. And I had recently read this, I mean, not too recently, like a year ago, read a book by Jill Kerr Conway, who is a pretty interesting woman. She grew up in the outback of Australia, you know, on a sheep farm. And she sort of rose from the an extremely rural situation. And she was a brilliant woman. And she rose to eventually become the president of Smith College in the U.S. And I thought her journey was so interesting. And also her, she sort of, she always tried to help people along the way of her career. So she wasn't, she was a feminist, but she wasn't only there to help women. She was there to help everybody. So I ended up writing a suite about three different periods of her life. So now I forgot the question. What did you ask me?
It was about kind of, you answered it about what was the vision? What were you going in? What inspired you to make this album?
Yeah, so I had this idea that I don't think she's ever been celebrated by anybody before, so I thought that would be nice to have a tribute to her. So I wrote these three pieces about different periods of her life. And then I thought, I'd like to record one of these. And I asked the one of my professors if he would be the producer to go record this song. And he said, yeah, but as long as you're in the studio, you might as well just... you know, make a whole album. And I think that was a little much for me at the time, because I'd never made a whole album or anything, but he was a very exuberant person that does a lot of things at once. And so he convinced me to not waste my time as long as I had all the musicians in the studio time. And so then I started filling out the album with other things that I thought might complement those songs about her life, songs yeah. about, you know, perseverance and doing well and going forward with your visions and things like that.
So is she still alive?
No, she died recently.
Okay.
She just got, you know, and she got the medal of, I'm going to forget the award. It's like some medal from Obama. There's a clip of her, like humanities or something. I need to find out what this is.
I think, yeah, it's the big honor it's the rainbow ribbon that goes
yes,
around.
Yes, exactly. So she got that. So she's not really well known, but, and then I was trying to figure out if I could reach out to her progeny or something, but she had no children. So I still need to reach out maybe to Smith College and let them know that I did this thing about their past president.
Yeah. I think it's a National Endowment for the Arts. I think it's
yes, thank
honor.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was going to get me too. Interesting. So let me ask you this. What are you hoping the listener gets from this album? It's obviously a personal look inside this kind of hero's journey, but just even from a visceral level, what are you hoping they get from this album?
Stitch Fix. Stop shopping. Get styled.
Not today, sweatpants. Somebody's wearing jeans that fit.
Wow! No photos, please. I'm just a regular dad who happens to have a stylist.
I really look my best when someone else makes the decisions.
Hey, we can all see you two-way mirrors.
Just share your size, style, and budget, and your stylist sends personalized looks right to your door. Stitch Fix. Get started today at stitchfix.com.
I want to hug you. I'm going to hug you. I'm coming in for a hug.
Well, I guess I want them to feel a certain way. Like, you know, I come from a not exactly full-on jazz background. I've played a lot of blues and things, and so I really like grooves, and I feel like that also kind of speaks to people. Like if they can just hear something and if the groove speaks to them, then I feel like that's my goal has been accomplished. So the album kind of has a bit of a melancholy flavor sometimes, bits of it do, but I hope they just get a feeling like they want to hear this. Yeah. They want to hear that groove, they want to feel that stuff again.
So where are you from originally?
I grew up in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay. All right. So how did music make sense? How did you start playing? How did jazz become a career? How did music kind of become your world?
Well, when I was little, my best friend in elementary school, her mother was a child prodigy concert pianist. And I had been taking piano. I mean, it all started when I was really young. I remember my babysitter showed me how to play Heart and Soul on the piano. And I remember the whole time that babysitter was there, I was like, oh, let's go play that again. Let's play it again. Let's play it again. And then the piano tuner came over and I wanted to take lessons. So I've always been pretty interested in music. But then I signed up with this teacher. Her name was Doris Lehnert. And she was she made her debut at Carnegie Hall when she was 9 or something. You know, she was... So I had this sort of classical background, and then then I took the long route after that. In college, I started off with something else, and then I eventually switched over to music. And then I, you know, I wasn't like a instant. I had a very long road. I sort of did other things for a while, then I came back to music. And then I had kids. And so I've been doing music all my life, but back and forth type of thing. Sure.
So what was the first live concert, jazz or otherwise, that you saw that blew you away and maybe made you think, I want to do that one day?
That's funny, because I remember the first big rock concert I went to was Jethro Tull.
Oh, nice.
But what made me want to play jazz, I think I heard Weather Report in Denver when I was young. But I don't know, I think I was always kind of interested in jazz way before that. You know, I think I was too intimidated to actually, I remember saying to my parents, you know, I want to study jazz now. And they said, oh, you know, that's a whole other discipline. You're doing classical, you know. But I was sort of always attracted to it from the sidelines. But I think I was a little bit intimidated. And when I grew up, I feel like there weren't a lot of women in roles that, I mean, there were on the at the top level, but not just around me. There weren't a lot of women playing jazz or anything other than classical that I saw. So I think I was a little bit shy, but yeah, maybe it was, I think I was always interested in like pop and blues and stuff like that, but I never really started playing it till I was like in my 20s. It's a long answer. When I was in undergrad, I played a little bit. I was in the jazz band in undergrad.
I remember in my 20s when I really started wrapping my head around jazz and listening to it, Marion McPartland had a show on public radio.
Yes.
And she just would, I always remember that jingle, and it was like the opening jingle, and she just had all those people on there, and everybody revered her like she was just a goddess. And I was like, who is this? And I remember looking into her, and she had an extensive career and catalog. But I remember that was really my gateway into not only radio, but in a lot of ways, just really kind of understanding. And then, of course, you know, Mary Lou Williams was born in Pittsburgh, but really grew up in Kansas City. And she is probably one of the best that ever played. And unfortunately,
oh, I know, her story is amazing. Yes. Yeah. She, you're right. There have been women all along, of course,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I didn't really understand that as just a little girl looking around. I didn't delve into it or understand that or anything. But as I did start learning about the women, it gave me some courage.
Yeah, for sure. So you know, when you're a musician, you have this dream, this kind of idealized notion, so to speak, of what your career is going to be like, what it's going to be like every day to wake up as a musician. And then you start living the life. What's been the difference between what you thought it was going to be like to be a professional musician and what it actually turned out to be?
I'm one of those musicians who just thinks it's really fun to have a gig. So I thought it'd be really fun to play gigs, and it is fun to play gigs. So I guess I'm lucky in that way that I never really thought I'm going to be a superstar.
Yeah.
I just thought, wouldn't that be fun to play gigs?
Yeah.
So, and it has been. I guess I'm lucky, but I still really just enjoy any gig, just playing with other people. And even this solo gig that I've recently picked up has been fun, just because there are people walking by and sometimes they have requests. And I guess I didn't really know what to expect. I guess, you know what, in my classical background, I had to compete for scholarships in college and stuff. And I remember being super nervous, you know, and I feel like with jazz, it's been.
This NBA playoffs with FanDuel, you're not just watching the playoffs, you're a part of them.
And we're back. Steve's got the phone, opens FanDuel, locks in player points. Quick fingers, you love to see it. Now he's going for threes. Big night for Steve-O.
Be a part of the action and get better payouts this NBA playoffs on FanDuel. 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-MY-RESET.
I'm still nervous, but there's more fun for me in jazz mostly because of playing with other people and creating things on the spot with those people.
So what's the San Diego scene like? What's the jazz community like down there?
Well, I'm not a huge part of the jazz community here. I'm kind of on the outskirts of it. I come more from the blues and R&B and dance group of musicians. But it seems like, I mean, I do know that it's a pretty solid group of people, and they're really dedicated to the history and the keeping the art form alive. And, you know, I have some gigs here and there that I cross paths with them, and they're all sort of a welcoming community that loves the music. And there are opportunities here. Like, there's this place called Dizzy's where, you know, for the love of the music people, it's not a bar or anything. I think it's a store during the, you know, like a, I'm not even sure what it is, but yeah. They've made it into a performance space, and people do, you know, it lives, it's alive here. It's not a huge scene, but it's not bad.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about what do you like the best about being a professional musician throughout the years and up to today? What is it that motivates you to create and to love this role of being a musician and putting out albums and live gigs?
Well, this is the first CD I've really put. I've been parts of other people's CDs, sure. But this is the first one I've put out. And I think I wish I could have enjoyed the process a little more. I was so nervous and worried about it all. But now I forgot your question. What did you say?
Just said, what do you like the best about being a musician? What is it that gets you up every day? What do you enjoy about it?
Yeah. It's just such a great way to intersect with all kinds of different people. You know, like when you're at a gig, all different kinds of people come by, and it's the beauty of humanity you see when you're a musician, because you really get to interact with different people. And I feel like that's such an important part of being a human. You know, like today with the social media and everything, people get isolated and forget how important it is just to connect in some way with other humans. And so being an artist or whatever, being part of some kind of live performance, it's usually there to like give people a break or have something fun or beautiful happen. And so you're there, you're present when these people are taking a break from maybe something more stressful or whatever. And so it's really nice to be a part of that moment of, or that period of time of people's lives, their day, their weekend, whatever.
You know, when I was out there, the No Kings protest was going on out there. And I know that living through a very specific time in America that's stressful on a lot of fronts. And I wonder, as a musician, you kind of touched on it a little bit, how much of that you're thinking about giving people that escape into the music to kind of get away from the headlines?
Yeah, I do think it's important now. Like I think that wherever people are on the political spectrum, a lot of people feel very stressed, and they feel they have to get out there and do things, and they have to contribute or whatever. And, you know, life is already stressful. And I think people are more stressed now. Like during my lifetime, the past 20, 30 years, I don't think there's been a time like this that's so stressful. So I think that people sometimes need to be reminded that you still have to live your life, and you still do have to find joy somewhere, or you're going to, you know, collapse. And so, yeah, I think it is important, especially during times like these, to try to keep your life balanced and try to find some joy, even during difficult times, you know?
For sure. So why do you love this art form we call jazz?
You know, it's funny. I feel like I haven't been playing jazz regularly for many, many years. I mean, I've been playing it, but I've been also doing other things. But the thing I love about jazz is the freedom. Like, it's sort of like everyone's trusted to learn their parts. you know, you need to know your stuff. And then you come together, and you don't necessarily, I mean, it's great if you can have a rehearsal, but if you don't, that's okay. Just take care of what has to be taken care of, and then you can be free to express things in your own way. And the more I do that, the less I want to do anything else.
Yeah.
So I've become more and more that I only want to do jazz because just the freedom it allows, and also just the wide variety of expression one can do within jazz. I mean, you can do anything you want, really. You could quote something from a classical piece. You could quote something from anywhere, and put that in your solo. And you know, the feel you bring to it is unique. Your signature is there, and there's just so much freedom as well as opportunity to create something with someone else. You know, like there's no, you know, if you are doing really well with someone else, maybe there'll be a whole chorus of you and that person doing something. And I don't know, it really forces me to try to bring myself intellectually to a level where I'm really focused on what's going on and trying to communicate in a way that makes sense.
So I know you do other genres and it's not just jazz, but if you could get into a time machine and go back in time and see one jazz performance, who would you go see? Where would you go?
Experience a membership that backs your business journey with American Express Business Platinum. When you pay with membership rewards points for all or part of an eligible flight booked with a qualifying airline through Amex Travel, you can get 35% of those points back, up to 1 million points back per calendar year. American Express Business Platinum. There's nothing like it. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-platinum.
That's a hard one because for a long time, my favorite guy was Oscar Peterson.
Yeah.
And I never have seen him live.
Yeah.
But then I sort of got into Gene Harris, a blues bass guy, and I did get to see him live. Yeah. And I have seen Herbie Hancock live.
Nice.
If someone's not alive, I guess I would have liked to see Art Tatum. But I feel like that would almost be like, there are certain musicians that are so far on another level that it's very inspirational, but it's nothing I would consider for myself.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, maybe I'd like to see him. I would like to see, I did see Miles Davis. I've seen a lot of great jazz people. I don't know. There's so many great ones. Who would you go to see?
Oh, I would love to be in the Apollo when Ella came out the first time.
Oh, I would love to see Ella or Sarah Vaughan.
Yeah. Because that was the time, you know, it's a pressure cooker in there, and she's a little girl. She walks out on stage and just blows the roof off of the place. And you know, they were all just like, what's going on here? Is this real? And then just, that was it. That was the moment that changed the world.
Wow. So. That's a good one. And now you're making me think of Billie Holiday. I wonder what it would have been like to see her.
Oh, it would have been crazy. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen her talking to Lester and all those guys backstage, because that's how she got the nickname Sassy, just like keeping up with the group and just how all that, that would have been fascinating to see.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. Everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Well, to be honest, I haven't been a person running the show that long. I'm the perpetual side person, you know, like I've many years, I just, whoever calls me, I learn their music and I do that. And then I have Fuzzy Rankins, the blues guy I've been playing with for many years. And so I have been, my identity as a musician was, I would like to believe that I was a side person who learned the music and showed up on time and played it and was as professional as I could be. So that was my image for a long time. But now that I'm doing a couple more jazz gigs and I had the opportunity to make this album and everything, I have been trying to be the professional person that gets some music to everybody and then runs an efficient rehearsal. I guess I'm the person who's learning on the job as far as being a leader goes. Although, you know, now that I have more gigs, I feel like it's not that different. You know, you get the music to people, you try to give people the tools they need so they can show up and do the job and respect their skills. You know, especially as a jazz person, I try to hire people that I respect their skills. As long as they know what we're going to play, then I don't have to worry about it. So I'd like to think of myself as kind of a collaborative leader. Yeah. Which reminds me of the way I like to teach in grad school was just, I tried to get everybody to like, okay, what do you want to do here? What arrangement should we do? Like really bringing people in. I don't like the top down thing so much as I like the let's all be collaborative together. Although I understand somebody has to make the decision at the end of the day. So,
yeah. So Jillo is the latest album. It's out streaming. If anybody wants to get a copy or catch you live, any of the other good business in your world, where do they go?
To catch me live, I have a gig coming up at, although it's not really Jillo stuff, but just straight ahead jazz at the U.S. Grant. It's a hotel here in San Diego. And I am going to be, the other gigs I have coming up are supporting the blues guy that I play with.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no worries. Well, I'll be sure to put the links in the show notes. It was so great to meet you. Thank you so much for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the funnest players and minds in San Diego, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Hendy for coming on by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.